everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a new Comics Wednesday episode. I'm going to be talking in detail about a few of the books that are going to be on your comic racks today. I'll also run down a list of other titles that you may be interested in picking up that either didn't get a chance to read or just, you know, things of note, I guess you'd say. But real quick, a couple of Kickstarter updates before I get into the books for today. First, Demigod, which is the Kickstarter from Ron Mars and Andy Smith and their Ominous Press imprint. Ron was on the podcast on Friday, special edition of the Comic Source, talking about that. At that time, the Kickstarter was at 11,000 and some change, I think, and that's of a $23,000 goal. So, you know, as Ron said, he was going to be kind of nervous right up till the end, but felt like for whatever reason, you know, there are a group of people on Kickstarter who seem to like to wait till the end to bid or pledge. And so $23,000 goal as of right now with 47 hours left, so basically 2 days, they're at $21,135. So they've got less than $2,000 to go to hit the goal and have that special hardcover edition of issue one. So I'll put a link in the show notes. Go back and listen to the Demigod episode from Friday if you want more information. It sounds like it's going to be a really fun series. You know, concept by Bart Sears, written by Ron Mars with art by Andy Smith. Deadpool crossed with Hercules, basically. So it sounds like it's going to be a whole heck of a lot of fun. The other Kickstarter update I have for you, really exciting news. So the Jeremy Nail Kickstarter omnibus, we know it got funded a while ago. I think somewhere around the 20th of February. And then it seemed like the pledges were just kind of trickling in. Didn't really seem like we were going to hit a lot of the stretch goals. The first stretch goal was at 21,000. There was another at 23, another at 26. There's one at 28 and then 30. Well, as of right now, with 40 hours to go, so a little less than 2 days, it's at $27,065. So less than $1,000 away from the stretch goal at 28,000, which are book plates, signed book plates for everybody, and less than $3,000 away from the $30,000 stretch goal, which is the shirts, which the shirts are amazing. I'll put a picture in the show notes so you guys can all see what they look like. They're shirts that my son and I had made. We were at Comic-Con one day every year. Always get a lot of comments on it. And I know that there's a lot of you Skyward fans out there that would really like to have one of these shirts. So this is like the only way they're going to get made. So if you haven't pledged, get out there, do it. There's 40 hours left, and it would be awesome to be able to get to that final stretch goal. So again, link in the show notes. And if you want more information, go back and listen to the Skyward special that Kale and I recorded a few weeks ago. So on to the books I'm going to talk about this new Comics Wednesday. 5 books in total. Usually I talk about a little bit more, but I think this is a good assortment. Again, no Marvel, unfortunately. Marvel actually has some of the more impactful books that I would like to talk about. But, you know, as I've said before on the podcast, for whatever reason, Marvel doesn't provide us with preview copies to be able to read and talk about so that, you know, I have this podcast ready for you to go on Wednesday morning. You know, I always record the podcast at least the night before, if not sooner, just so I can have it released for the East Coasters, you know, early in the morning, riding the subway or driving to work, whatever. So, you know, a lot of things are released digitally that I could, you know, pay money for and get from Marvel and then, you know, have it released at a later time or even, you know, pick up my books Wednesday and have the podcast up for you on Thursday. But I don't want to do that. I like the fact that our Wednesday episodes come out, you know, first thing Wednesday. So if you go to pick up your books before you go to work, there's already, you know, just some reference, just some idea of what's out there, you know, what to look for. So I'll continue to do that. And at some point, hopefully we'll get Marvel on board and they'll send us some preview copies of books and we'll be able to, you know, have some thoughts on some of those Marvel books. In the meantime, you know, at the end, I always go through the list of publishers and other titles that I think are of note. So the first book I'm going to talk about is Superman number 42, written by Peter J. Tomasi and Patrick Gleason. Pencils are by Patrick Gleason and colors are by Alejandro Sanchez. So this is the first book in a new story arc, Boy-Zaro. So it's basically a Bizarro version of Superboy. And the first half of the book is based in that Boy-Zaro Superboy's world. So we see a Bizarro Superman. We see a Bizarro Lois Lane. We see them on a worm farm is where they live. They grow worms, I guess. And we see the Boy-Zaro, the Bizarro version of Jonathan Kent, basically. I have to admit, I'm not the biggest fan of Bizarro. I know that the Bizarro from the current Rebirth universe is now apparently very smart. I haven't been reading the Red Hood and the Outlaws where that Bizarro shows up, but I actually like that idea, and I do want to get caught up on that series. Manny's caught up on it, and he was telling me a little bit about it the other day, and it definitely has me intrigued. But this Boy-Zaro is from, a different world in the multiverse, a different dimension. And so it's not the – and his father, Bizarro, is not the same version of Bizarro that we see in the Red Hood and the Outlaws. So John Kent and his friend Kathy are kind of exploring the multiverse and her spaceship kind of thing. And they get to go, he gets to go meet the Boy-Zaro, but they're still separated by a thin energy membrane. So they're not supposedly touching. But then at the end, we see Boy-Zaro somehow has been pulled into the regular DC universe. So we'll see where it goes from there. But like I was saying, I'm not the biggest fan of Bizarro, and a lot of it has to do with the speech. And I understand that they like speak in opposites, like me am not your friend, and me am not Bizarro, and it means the opposite or whatever. But it's just honestly for me, and I guess maybe I'm just a little lazy when it comes to this, it's just such a pain to read and like have to translate things in my head. I don't like it. I know some people do. I know some people love it, but it's just not for me. That being said, the second half of the book, the character moments with John and his friend Kathy, and then especially with the Kents at the dinner table, kind of giving John a hard time about having a crush on this girl, they're absolutely amazing. It's exactly what I've loved about having Tomasi and Gleason on this book and on the Super Sons book as well. They handle this dynamic between Clark and Lois and John so well. They really balance like the action and the time and costume and kind of what you think the book should be as far as it's a Superman book, so it needs to be telling Superman stories. They balance that so well with a lot of quiet moments and family scenes. It's great, and I'm really sad to see those two leaving the book because I feel like they've done such an incredible and remarkable job. And I know Superman's going to take a different direction with Bendis, but I hope that he can kind of draw from the groundwork that Tomasi and Gleason have laid to kind of ensure we keep getting these quiet moments going forward and we're getting these the family time. I know Bendis is capable of it, but I don't know exactly what his take or what direction he's going to take Superman. So I hope that he continues to give us these quiet moments, the family time. And I guess we'll see going forward. There's not really much more we can say or speculate about until we see some of the work. All right, next up, also from DC, is The Wildstorm number 12, written by Warren Ellis. The art is by John Davis Hunt, and the colors are by Steve Buccellato. So I haven't talked about The Wildstorm before on this podcast, but it's basically a reimagining of the Wildstorm universe, the Wildcats story and team that Jim Lee created way back when. He founded Image. And then, eventually we sold the Wildstorm studio and all the properties to DC. So this is Warren Ellis's take on it. And this series has been really, really good. Just Warren Ellis's different take. It's still, it's still about the, you know, the black ops and the secret governments and the conspiracies and these powerful organizations working behind the scenes. And it, you know, more modern take on the characters, not quite so super heroic, more kind of spy and gritty and cutting edge. And it's been just spectacular. It's been so good. I was sad that John Davis Hunt left Clean Room, the Vertigo title that he was working on from Gail Simone. But at the same time, I'm glad he's, you know, if he did have to leave, I'm glad he went to this because his art is so perfectly suited for this. He has somewhat of a realistic style, but it's detailed enough that when he does draws the aliens or the tech, there, he has a real flair for it. When he draws the bleed, it's done really well. And the colors by Steve Bucciolato, again, when it comes to the colors of the bleed and doing special effects and all that stuff, it's where his work really shines. So again, the entire series has been just spectacular, and it's supposed to be 24 issues. And what's cool is, so at the top of every issue, it says The Wildstorm, and then there's numbers from 1 through 24. And whichever particular issue is, there's like a red marker that denotes what issue it is. So issue 12 is basically like the first six issues are kind of a book or a chapter, if you want to think of it that way. You know, chapter one of this four-chapter story. So issue 12 is the end of kind of the second chapter. And we saw some really cool things go down. Issue 12 was very action-packed. We saw the organizations kind, you know, one of the organizations trying to get back at one of the other organizations, trying to gain leverage on them because they don't feel like they're in a good spot. Meanwhile, our heroes, our protagonists, are attacking them at the same time, trying to get some information of their own and kind of shut down something that's going on. And it kind of leaves the one organization exposed to the other without them knowing it. So again, it's about, you know, the politics of these different factions that are fighting against each other when supposedly they're supposed to be on the same side. And they don't all understand or have a good idea of what the other one is up to. So there's a lot of, you know, politics involved. There's a lot of backstabbing. There's a lot of, you know, secret and all that kind of stuff. So it made for a really enjoyable issue. And right at the end, we get a look at somebody who has been referred to in the series all along, which that's John Lynch, who some of you may recognize that name from the previous iteration of the Wildstorm universe. And I kind of got the impression before we see his appearance at the end of the issue that he was dead. And I think a lot of the characters in the book that we've met so far believe him to be dead, but apparently he's alive and well. And, you know, great way to end kind of the second chapter of the book. And I can't wait for issue 13 because I have a feeling just based on this issue that issue 13 is going to be jam-packed with action. I think the crap is really going to hit the fan. You know, not to say this issue is a setup issue because there was a ton of action in this issue as well. But again, this book has been absolutely spectacular. It's a relatively easy read. You know, it's Warren Ellis, so the dialogue is humorous at times and pretty sharp. But what's interesting is that I've noticed over the last few years that Warren Ellis has become a lot more economical with his scripting, and especially when he has an artist like John Davis Hunt working on the book, he can you know, go 3-4 panels without any dialogue at all. And, you know, Hunt does such a great job and he has such a great sense of storytelling and movement that you don't miss it. Like there's nothing, it's not like more dialogue is needed at all. It's an incredible story. It's really a great match. I would love to see John Davis Hunt illustrate something else by Warren Ellis, something more superhero centric, just to see what that marriage would be like. I know Warren hasn't really wanted to do kind of the the main superhero kind of stuff for a while. You know, even when he did Moon Knight, he took it in you know, a different direction, kind of similar to what he's doing with the Wildstorm universe here. But that, just for my own curiosity, I'd like to see where that goes. Because, you know, like I said, John Davis Hunt had been previously on Clean Room with Gail Simone. So that's not really a superhero title either. So love to see what John Davis Hunt would do with a superhero book. That's not to say I want him to leave this at all. I want him on the entire run of Wildstorm because he's perfectly suited for it. It's absolutely incredible. So if you haven't read the Wildstorm at all, I definitely encourage you to pick it up. There hasn't been a lot of buzz about it, but I'm sure the first six issues are available in trade. And I don't think that the issues would be that hard to track down either. Cause like I said, there hasn't been a lot of buzz about it, but I know retailers are ordering it because it's Wildstorm and it's Warren Ellis. And a lot of them have Jim Lee variant covers. So I don't think they're going to be too hard to find, as opposed to sometimes when, you know, an issue is not kind of one of the main titles, it could be a little under ordered and then it can be hard to find, you know, after that initial Wednesday. I think that's the case with Wildstorm. I see this book on the shelves at a lot of comic shops that I go into, so I definitely recommend it. It's absolutely spectacular. All right, the next book I'm going to talk about is called Highest House, and it's from IDW. It's from writer Mike Carey, artist Peter Gross, and colorist Fabian Alquier. Alquier. And I'll just read the solicit for you. The creators behind the Hugo Award nominated The Unwritten, Mike Carey and Peter Gross, invite you into the Highest House, the story of a slave boy named Moth, who makes friends with a powerful entity called Obsidian that promises advancement and happiness. Clearly, Obsidian has a hidden agenda, but Moth has ambitions and plans of his own. With series covers by award-winning illustrator Yuko Shimizu. So this was a really interesting book. It really reminded me, this first issue, of kind of the first few chapters of a grand fantasy epic kind of book. And I didn't know what to expect. I've never read Unwritten. I'm not that familiar with Mike Carey's work, but I was curious enough from the information in the solicit to give it a try. And I did enjoy it. You know, the boy is sold into slavery along with a bunch of other slaves, and they're taken to this, it's called the Highest House. It's kind of a cross between like a castle and a small town, I guess you'd say, or a plantation sort of. The first issue, we don't meet the ruling family. They're away, but the headmaster of the house goes out. He purchases slaves. He travels back. The slaves are assigned to different, you know, jobs in the house. You know, one goes to work for the stable master. Another one goes to work for the, like, maintenance person. Others go to work as, you know, chambermaids or work in the kitchen or what have you. So it's a lot of setup. We're to understand that magic has been kind of removed from this world, and wizards were all killed off. But clearly the headmaster has some abilities which are not easily explainable. And it's also very apparent in the first issue that he sees something in this boy Moth, because when he's brought before him initially, the mother brings – she has six children. She brings the two small ones, the two kind of runts of the litter, I guess you'd call them, before the headmaster, and tries to sell them. And the headmaster even remarks, like he looks at the girl and says, you know, she already has curtains in her eyes. She'll be blind in another couple of years. You know, why would I want to buy a blind girl? And then the boy seems to have some kind of asthmatic condition, but yet he still sees something in him, and he tests him in ways that he doesn't test any of the other potential slaves. You know, ask him to close his eyes. What do you see? Ask him to hold a stone. Does it feel cold to you, warm, hot? So there's clearly something going on. The headmaster clearly sees something in the slave boy Moth that there's more there to meet the eye. But yet when he gets him to Highest House, he doesn't give him any preferential treatment. He's not like, okay, I'm going to train you myself or anything like that. He lines him up with the rest of the slaves to be chosen by, you know, whatever particular person running the kind of the departments of the house, you know, chooses to pick him. So a very interesting start. And there's much more to be learned about, you know, the ruling family and the world that Cary and Gross are building. But again, if you like fantasy, I would definitely recommend this. It seems like it's going to be a pretty high concept fantasy novel about this boy, and or fantasy story, I should say, not novel. But it's done really well. And I'm very curious to see where it goes from here. I'm definitely going to be picking up issue 2. So again, that's Highest House from IDW. All right, the next book I'm going to talk about, this is my book of the week. As much as I loved Wildstorm, it's no contest here. It's Gideon Falls number 1 from writer Jeff Lemire and artist Andrea Sorrentino, and colors by Dave Stewart. And it, as far as saying, you know, Lemire's the writer, Sorrentino's the artist, both of them, this is according to the back matter in the book, there's an essay in the back by Jeff Lemire talking about the kind of the journey that brought this book to your comic rack, how it's kind of a mix between two different ideas that he's had over the years. One of them from 20 years ago, one of the first things he ever wrote, and then working with Andrea on Green Arrow initially, and then reuniting with him on Old Man Logan. And they decided the next thing they want to do was something for the two of them, something where they had complete creative control. And so Jeff bringing these two ideas, you know, different stories, and kind of melding them together, and then, you know, getting Andrea involved. And again, Lemire's not listed as writer, and Sorrentino listed as artist. So I really think that a lot of what you're seeing as far as plot and story-wise is the both of them working together. But I did not notice that any of the art looks like Lemire's. It looks like all the art is Sorrentino. And I'll get into some details about the art in a few minutes. But this is another one that I want to read the solicit for you, because it's going to do a better job than I could actually do of kind of explaining what the book is about, and then I'll get into my thoughts on it. So the solicit reads, a brand new ongoing series from the acclaimed best-selling creative team of Old Man Logan and Green Arrow. The lives of a reclusive young man obsessed with a conspiracy in the city's trash and a washed-up Catholic priest arriving in a small town full of dark secrets become intertwined around the mysterious legend of the Black Barn, an otherworldly building that is alleged to have appeared in both the city and the small town throughout history, bringing death and madness in its wake. Rural mystery and urban horror collide in this character-driven meditation on obsession, mental illness, and faith. So I love that. I definitely got that from the first issue. You understand the obsession of this mentally ill person who, when the story starts, is digging through the trash, and he picks up some, I was looking at the art so intently, like trying to figure out, like, he's looking for something in particular in the trash. He's like, where is it? I know it's here. It's got to be here somewhere. Where is it? And then when he finally gets something, I'm looking at it so intently because I'm trying to figure out what the heck it is, because it just looks like a little piece of wood. And then when he gets back to his house, it turns out he's got jars and jars of this trash, basically, that he's picked out of the trash over the years, that he has labeled and organized with where he got it. There's dates on it. And it's like, what is this? So you definitely get the obsession. And later he's talking to his therapist, and you know, you're catching on to that. You're catching on to that, man, this guy, there's something not quite right. So, you know, you see the obsession, you see the mental health illness. And then we have the other character who's the priest, where the faith comes in. But there's more to meet than meets the eye with him too, because it seems like he's running away from something. He's actually scared to be out on his own, you know, because he's the only priest in this town. He's replacing the previous priest who died, and we don't necessarily know how. And when we meet the priest, His name's Father Fred. He's at the seminary. So he's there with, you know, like-minded people, other priests. He's teaching. He feels safe. He feels sheltered from whatever it is that happened in his past or whatever it is that he's kind of scared of. But he's sent out. They say, hey, it's, you know, the bishop says, hey, it's time to go get back out there. You know, this is what you need to do. And we're going to see Father Fred and this other man who's so obsessed. His name's Norton Sinclair. I'm sure we're going to see their paths cross. And it's going to have something to do with this black barn, which appears in the pages of the book and looks quite foreboding. So the first issue ends with a gruesome scene. And I'm sure we'll find out a lot more about what exactly that is and how that happened and get some more of the mystery unveiled and some of our questions answered in issue two. Because for now, it's a lot of mood and a lot of attitude and a lot of trying to understand why Norton is walking around the city picking up trash. He seems to think they're bits of the barn. But when we see Father Fred visited by a supposedly dead Father Tom, his predecessor, and we see the black barn just kind of appear out of nowhere, and it's an incredible image. It's like this dark, creepy-looking building with this red sky in background behind it. It is a sight to behold. The sky is red, the black clouds, it's something. Something for sure. So what exactly the black barn is, I'm sure we'll find out. But for me, the story is all about mood. And so as much as I love the narrative and the way Lemire is already starting to draw out the suspense and show this, at least to me, show the beginnings of a very like taut thriller, I don't think he could have done as great of a job without Andrea Sorrentino on the book. I think that's where the marriage and the mood and the attitude and the marriage of words and pictures really comes together with the way that these two work together. Because as I said, the art just has a lot of attitude to it and mood, and it has such an incredible feel. And what it reminds me of is, so it's really easy in horror movies to kind of set the mood when you get all your ducks in a row, right? When you have the creepy setting and you have the music and you have the time frame, like usually it's at night and it's dark and you get that feeling, right? Like, oh, something's going to happen. You don't have all those things when you're doing a comic and you're trying to establish mood. You don't have the luxury of being able to show with moving pictures exactly what the setting is. And you certainly don't have the auditory aspect, which I feel is a big part of horror movies, how they can kind of ramp up the suspense and get you thinking something's about to happen as the music, you know, reaches a crescendo. You don't have that advantage with a comic. And Sorrentino doesn't even have the advantage of having this set at night, at least not when we first see the priest, Father Fred, arrive in the town. Instead, he chooses to set it during the daytime, which I really appreciated because with the kind of the bleached out colors that Dave Stewart uses here, it reminds me of some of those classic horror films where they manage to capture the mood and the creepiness and the desolation and the loneliness of these small towns, even during the daytime. You know, you get these bleached out looks and the streets are empty. And it just seems foreboding. It seems like there's something there just beyond the corner of your vision. And it's not that you can't see it because it's dark. It's just that you can't see it because it's hidden. No matter where you look, it's always going to be right there at the edge of your vision. So the first time we see the church where the father goes, and just as I said, kind of the bleached out look of the the lighting, it really felt creepy. Even though, as I said, it's during the daylight hours, and you don't normally associate being able to see with that fear of the unknown. But daytime or night, Sorrentino establishes mood and attitude, and really sets a tone for the book that's absolutely incredible. And it marries with Lemire's scripting extremely well. So, incredible start. Definitely my book of the week. And I really, really encourage you all to go and pick up Gideon Falls number one. All right, last book I'm going to talk about, also written by Jeff Lemire. And Lemire's actually the artist on the book as well, with René de Oguedes. And it's Bloodshot number seven, Bloodshot Salvation number seven, from Valiant. And this is the only Valiant book that came out this week. Warm Mother may have come out last week. Some sites had it listed on the solicitations for last week, and some had it for this week. So I did cover Warm Mother in last week's Valiant Sunday. So if you want to know more about that, go and check that out. And it may be that Warm Mother's coming out this Wednesday, as well as Bloodshot Salvation number seven. Not 100% sure on that, but for sure Bloodshot Salvation is coming out. And I have heard some complaints about this book. It basically doesn't really have any pictures. It's Bloodshot's blind. He's gone to the dead side to try to save his daughter. And, you know, Jessie's just a baby. She's wrapped up in a blanket. Bloodshot's holding her in his arms, and he crosses over to the dead side, and he can't see. He's blind. His dog is there as well, and the bloodhound, if you will, is kind of guiding him, but he can't see. So, you know, he's in a foreign place, in a foreign land, doesn't really know where to go or what to do. And, you know, again, being that it's kind of an all blackout issue, I did hear some complaints from people like, hey man, you know, comics are $4 and I don't want to pay $4 and not get any art, and, you know, didn't like it, felt cheated, whatever. In my mind, I'll read anything that Jeff Lemire puts out, because he's that good of a writer. And so in my mind, he's earned my trust. He's earned the right to experiment and tell a story like this. And it's interesting. I was just talking about Sorrentino being able to set mood with light, right? Being able to make the Gideon Falls moments scary and suspenseful when Father Fred first arrives into town. It's during daylight hours. And here we are with fear and mood and tone being established because the issue's pitch black. And Lemire does play around with the way the borders of the panels go, because some of the pages do still have panels, and with using the panel borders as splashes for when Bloodshot's in the water and when he's being attacked by certain flying creatures. And it's incredible. He does a great job. There's particularly one moment, and it has to do with the water, where I'm reading along and I'm just saying to myself, no, 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 this can't be happening. No, no, no. I mean, there's no pictures, but I'm immersed in the story, right? I'm going right along with Bloodshot. I can feel his panic. I can feel the tension. I can feel, the impact of this moment and of this event. And it's because there are no pictures. It's because of the way the scripting is laid out. It's because of the way he's drawing the panels. It's all taken as a whole to be something. And just because it doesn't have, you know, the kind of art and kind of, you know, pictures, I guess you'd say, that we're used to, it doesn't mean there's not value there. It doesn't mean that it's not an interesting way to tell a story and to tell a narrative, because, again, Lemire's a good enough writer and he's earned my trust that when he wants to experiment like this, I'm willing to give it a try. And what it really showed me. And so I'm reading the book, and I'm like, okay, you know, there's no pictures. That's fine. We'll see how it goes. And when I got to that moment, that event that happens kind of in the middle of the book, and I felt myself being sucked in, I felt the panic. I was emotionally invested right there. That told me, okay, this book and the way that Lemire's decided to tell this story about this issue with Bloodshot being blind and using this mechanism of complete darkness. It's working. I'm completely sucked in. I'm totally involved. I don't know that I would have been as emotionally invested if there had been pictures on that page. Because, I mean, even though you try not to look ahead, you can't help but turn the, you know, you turn the page or you, you know, roll the wheel on your mouse if you're reading digitally or you swipe, you know, to the left on your tablet and the whole page shows up. And even though you're not looking, you know, at the panels on the bottom of the page, you start at the top as you're reading. You can't help but kind of see him, kind of get a sense of what's going to happen. And the way it goes down here with, you know, complete pitch darkness, you have no way of knowing what's happened until you actually read the words. And it just worked for me. I like I said, I got totally sucked in. I there was fear. I felt completely emotionally invested and completely understood what Bloodshot was feeling at that moment, especially, you know, as a father and he's trying to protect his child. Right at the end, we do get one page. Bloodshot's nanites come back online as far as him being able to see. And what he sees is doesn't look like it's going to be necessarily in his best interest. So definitely interested in seeing where it goes from here. But I really enjoyed this issue. I had absolutely no problem with the fact that there isn't much like rendering done. I won't say there's no art because the way that Lemire was able to capture my imagination and make me feel something emotionally with the way he set out the scripting and the panels and all that, it is a work of art in my mind. So definitely encourage you to go and check it out. So that's all the books I'm going to go into detail on. Let me just go to the list here and talk about a few of the other titles that are coming out today that you might be interested in. From Aftershock Comics, in addition to Unholy Grail trade paperback that I covered on Monday's Aftershock Monday episode, we also have the fourth issue of Monstro Mechanica, which is kind of an alternate history Leonardo da Vinci tale. From Boom Studios, we have the latest issue of Mech Cadet U, number 7. Again, that's a super, super fun book. Definitely for all ages. Really encourage you if you have young kids or grandkids that are interested in comics, that's a great book. You don't have to worry about it being like super violent or bloody or anything like that. It's certainly no Walking Dead. It's basically about a boy and his pet robot. So it's really good. From DC, in addition to the couple books I mentioned, we have Batman 42, which is the second part of that Poison Ivy story that Tom King is telling. We have Batman White Knight number 6 from Sean Gordon Murphy. I think there's two more issues left of that series. We have Black Lightning Cold Dead Hands number 5 of 6. We also have Justice League number 40, Nightwing number 40, which I think is, let me just check real fast. I think this might be Sam Humphrey's last issue of the book, or he may have one more. I'm not 100% sure on that. I also want to mention from Image, in addition to Gideon Falls number 1, we have Oblivion Song number 1 by Robert Kirkman. And this looks like it's going to be really, really good. It's some event has happened somewhere in Pennsylvania. One of the cities is kind of cut off, and apparently the government has been trying to send people into the Oblivion that was formerly like Philadelphia, I think it is where it happens, and have been unsuccessful for years and years and years. And they finally have given up. And it's about the story of one guy who won't get up. He's won't give up. He's still trying to go in there and rescue the people in Philadelphia. So a lot of people are talking about it as the next Walking Dead, but you know, honestly, there will never be another Walking Dead. That was kind of lightning in a bottle. And, you know, don't go out and buy Oblivion Song thinking you're going to have a, you know, $1,500 book on your hands in, you know, 10 years. Too many people know the name of Kirkman now. Too many people are going to go out and buy issue 1 just for the speculative, piece of it. But if you like Kirkman's writing, if you like this idea of this post-apocalyptic world mixed with the modern world, then go and check it out. But don't go buying it thinking you're going to put your kid through college if you, you know, buy 20 copies of it and you're going to sell them 10 years down the road. probably not going to happen. From Marvel, we have the next issue of Amazing Spider-Man, number 797, continuing Dan Slott's last hurrah on the character leading up to issue 800. We also have the latest issue of Avengers No Surrender, that's 683, continuing the story by Mark Waid and Jim Zub and a few others, the weekly tale of Avengers No Surrender. We also have Infinity Countdown number 1, which is Marvel's latest kind of event series, I guess you'd say. It's going to have a few crossovers. And of course, we have the Avengers Infinity War movie coming out. So they were due for an event that kind of tied into that. So I think that's going to do it. I really want to thank you all for listening as always. Don't forget, you can go to thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date with all our convention coverage and to find out when we are releasing new episodes. And as always, we want to thank you for listening. And we'll have more details on our LRM transition coming up really, really soon. And details about a giveaway we're going to have at WonderCon, as well as a follow-up contest. So stay tuned for all those details for sure. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.